We have a guest here in the studio from our YAC, which is the Youth Advisory Council. When we opened our new 3,500 square foot youth media center, we knew that one thing, even before we opened it, one thing we wanted to have was a group of student leaders who could help us develop a good culture and vibe and environment. There's actually tons of research on this too, not to bore you, but we spoke with some of our friends at Pitt and the Neutral Zone, which is located in Ann Arbor, also has done some great work in the area, and Remake Learning and Carlo University as well. And in any event, that's what brought Sarah Woodside to us. And join me as we welcome Sarah. Good morning.
Morning. How are you?
I'm good. I'm really glad you're here. Now, we're going to talk a bit, but my first question is simply this. You have a lot of places you could be on a Saturday morning, I would imagine. Would you normally be somewhere else this morning? I'm honored that you're here.
Usually on Saturdays, it's time where I work on homework, and it's kind of sad that that's what I do on a Saturday. But I'll sometimes visit my Nana, who lives in Shadyside, or I'll go to a coffee shop with my dad. But I really like listening to SLV, too.
Well, I'm glad you're here, and thanks. Let's any shout-outs you want to give now or that folks will hear when they hear the rebroadcast of this?
I want to say hi to my mom and dad, to my sister in college in D.C., and to my Nana, who I love spending time with.
Excellent. What's your sister's name?
Lowry.
Hi, Lowry. It's good to have you here. You're 16 and at the Ellis School. Have you been at the Ellis School for all of your middle school years, or even back to elementary?
I've been here since since before I could read.
Wow.
There's only one other girl in my class who's been there for that long. But it's fun because we have good memories, and it's kind of nice to be able to track my learning journey. And I'm very lucky to have been going there for a long time. I'm very lucky.
If you're not familiar with it, the Ellis School is a girls' school. It's been around forever. Is it, I can't imagine what it would be like to be at a school that's all one gender. It probably has its pros and cons, I would bet.
Yeah, I think a pro is that I feel more confident to raise my hand in class and to run for offices. I don't think I would have had the courage, because I'm co-editor of our school's literary publication, and I don't know if I would have had the courage to do it if I didn't see the older girls doing it before me.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've been out there. Is Ms. Moldovan still there,
who's an art teacher? She just retired last year.
Yeah, Ms. Moldovan is somebody I always enjoyed working with. And the times I've been out to do some projects with her, it's just been amazing. There's something very nice about having an environment where women are especially empowered, especially at that time of life where all of us are kind of, if you're that age, it's nice to be with supportive people.
Miss Mulvin was fantastic. I have some of my first SLB memories from being at Ellis, because when we celebrated our 100th birthday, it was in 2016, and the Saturday Light Brigade came down to interview students. And I think that moment I was like, that'd be kind of fun to do.
We did that. I forgot about that. We came with portable recorders and interviewed students about their experiences. I know you also made, I think, a big quilt.
It was these leaves, and they're hanging over the cafeteria area.
Yeah,
and so it's nice to have those memories kind of stored up there. And it was a really fun year. We got to do a lot of great things.
Well, we're going to talk about learning in a little bit, but I'm just curious: what do you like to do for fun? Hobbies, interests, anything like that?
I'm a big movie watcher. I have a there's this app called Letterboxd where you can review movies, and I spend a lot of my weekends making lists of things I want to watch. I'm really into, I always love writing in my journal, writing of any kind. You can take all your thoughts and put them down on your canvas, and it's really relaxing.
Sounds that way. Now, when you look for movies, are you only looking at current stuff, or are you looking at stuff you may have missed?
I love all kinds of things. I grew up watching a lot of old movies and TV shows. My mom, her favorite channel is TCM, so we're turning classic movies. So
I like TCM, and I just discovered that we don't get TCM, and I need to make a change about that. I didn't realize it.
Yeah, one of my favorite movies is Roman Holiday with Gregory Peck and Audrey Hepburn. And I'm actually doing a rom-com mini course at my school at the end of the year. We have 2 weeks after finals of student-led courses, so I thought that would be fun to do. So that's one of my favorite movies.
Okay, you can answer this question for me, I think. I like language a lot, so as I read and look at things, I every now and then notice expressions that seem to be popping up out of nowhere, and everybody's using them, or at least the places I read, and that's the meet cute. Do you know the meet cute?
Yeah, it's a popular term you use in rom-coms, when Harry Met Sally, it's like they're on this road trip or in all these different things. And my friends always have this joke now that whenever we do something fun, they're like, Sarah, this could be a great meet cute.
Yeah, I saw that. It's something in the New York Times. Somebody on social media used it. I heard it somewhere else, and I'm thinking, everybody's saying it.
It's kind of fun to see the little pop culture things that pop up again and again, and you don't even realize that's part of your vernacular.
Exactly. For a while, this goes back a while, but the word conflate was really big. You know, we don't confuse things, we don't mistake things, we conflate things, and it does have a particular meaning, but the word just... Like if you could graph its word, its usage, all of a sudden it had a little spike out of nowhere. So in addition to movies, are you into sports or anything else?
In the fall, at my school we have three different trimesters, so there's three different opportunities to play three different sports. So I play tennis in the fall, basketball in the winter, and I play softball in the spring. But this week was my first time ever playing. I had never picked up a bat, never put on a glove, and I've had four practices so far, and I'm already loving it.
Oh, that's great. Well, it skills from tennis aren't necessarily transferable. If my memory is right, I was a great tennis player, but not the greatest hitter because the grip's a little different and the timing is very different. Do you have a preference for batting or fielding?
I think it's what you're saying about tennis and that stuff coming over. I think it's so funny because a lot of times when you're hitting a ball, it feels like you're just doing a reverse backhand. So when you're doing a backhand, you use two hands on the racket.
Oh, yeah.
And you're pushing it up like that. And it feels very similar to when you're hitting a ball.
Yeah, and plus, you might be... Like when I played tennis, I wasn't necessarily very strong, but I was pretty strategic and was good at being able to kind of know right where I wanted to put the ball. And that would be a really good skill as a softball hitter, I would think, hitting it where nobody is there to catch it. How cool. This is your junior year, right? Did you guys go remote for a full year or for most of a year at Ellis?
We went, so we were remote starting when everyone went remote, with COVID and all that. And we were able to go back to school the next year, but it was every Wednesday we were virtual. And we all wore masks and we were in classrooms, sanitizing every few things. But we have a smaller school student population because you imagine it's a small school to begin with. And then you cut out just girls, so it's a lot smaller. So we were able to come back, but it was kind of like a little bit half and half. And sometimes we stayed home and were virtual for like 2 weeks before and 2 weeks after Thanksgiving and Christmas, or like winter break and all that, as well as spring break, just to mitigate risk. But we were lucky enough to be in person for majority.
Yeah, you had you could distance people, had mm-hmm. enough space and a little bit of a lot of flexibility. Mm-hmm. Do you think a lot of folks are saying, you know, if you're 16, 17, 18, well, really even younger too, that you've got a kind of a gap in your life mm-hmm. that folks who, graduated before the pandemic don't have. Do you sense that, or is it? I'm just curious. I'm sure you've thought about it.
Yeah, I definitely sensed that. Cause I was in eighth grade whenever everything happened. So it kind of felt, I think also going into high school is also a big transition for anyone, but especially doing that during COVID was a little crazy. But my older sister, she graduated in 2021, and she was my age whenever COVID happened.
This would be Lowry.
Yeah. And yeah. She definitely felt a difference going and having a very weird senior year because you didn't have any of the dances. Because at least like class of 2020 got to have homecoming and some of those things. But like a lot of like the senior privileges we have at Ellis were like taken away. So you couldn't leave and come back and all those different things. And it was interesting because she was going to like right whenever COVID was going to happen, she was getting ready to take the SAT. And so I think she took it over the summer, but like by herself in a classroom at school. And it was a very interesting situation.
Yeah, that would be to just have this solitary mm-hmm. environment of doing it. It really, I don't think we yet understand the impacts mm-hmm. That this has had on yeah. all of us when we think about it. If you're just joining us, this is Sarah Woodside. Sarah is 16. She goes to the Ellis School. She told me earlier this morning that she lives in Point Breeze, which we used to live near there, and it's a great neighborhood to be in. One of the things we were going to talk about is I'll call it a learning difference, which would be my preferred way. I hope that's an okay way of putting it. But you discovered fairly recently that your mind works a little differently when it comes to numbers. Now, by the way, if you are younger or even older, and if some concepts regarding numbers have always been different for you, this might really be of interest because I think Sarah discovered this about herself somewhat later in life than other people might. And I don't want to steal your thunder. Tell me a little bit about this.
So I have dyscalculia. I was diagnosed around the fall of this year. But I had known since around fifth grade that I had issues with patterns and sequencing, specifically in math. And we were talking about standardized testing, and my older sister has ADD, attention deficit disorder. And so it's not nice to have a learning difference, but it was nice to have someone I could trust to talk about that kind of stuff with my older sister. And I thought it was very interesting because I remember when I was younger, I was really confused by analog clocks. It took me so long. My mom had to go out and buy a big clock to put in our house so I could finally learn how to do it. It took me a while to get the hang of all of my tables, like division, multiplication, subtraction, addition, because I felt specifically around second to third grade that I was kind of grasping on to addition and subtraction and the more complex parts of that. When I was starting to learn multiplication and division, I felt like I was losing those things in my memory. And it was like it was loosening out of my grip, and I was trying to juggle all those things at once. And it was really tough for me.
That's fascinating. There are more patterns in multiplication and division that build upon one another than I think there are in addition and mm-hmm. subtraction. And you seem super bright, so it must have been really frustrating to feel that you weren't, either that you were losing skill, like you were saying, or what did it feel mm-hmm. like?
I just felt like there was something wrong. Like, I felt like I saw the other kids in my grade who were, like, doing a lot better than me in math, and I felt like the odd one out. But as I got older into middle school, I had finally grasped all those, like, tables and things, but then I saw myself having confusion with decimals and percents and number values and remembering all those things, and I still have trouble with that. Like, when I do preparation, or I'm, like, doing a, like, preparation in a book for the ACT or the SAT, I still have confusion when it comes to those things. But one of the reasons I'm only taking the ACT as of now is because the math percentage is a lot smaller. So there's four segments in that. And my sister agreed with her learning disability or difference that she thought that worked better for her. And I think most of that test is mostly reading comprehension, and I do get extra time with my learning disability, but I feel like it's sometimes extra time, it doesn't really show that my abilities, or that's what's kind of tough with those math portions, because having extra time isn't going to change the fact that I'm confused by something or not, you know?
Yeah, it seems like what you really need is a different method of learning, or a different method of determining mm-hmm. whether you've learned or not. It's one thing to diagnose a broken arm. How were you diagnosed? And that had to be, I would imagine, probably a good feeling to have a diagnosis, mm-hmm. But also a strange one too.
Mm-hmm. I think being diagnosed with dyscalculia kind of gave me a lot of clarity about my struggles with math when I was younger. I think all those things started to click, and I could realize, oh, that's why I had trouble with this. This explains this. And it gave me more opportunities to find ways of learning that worked better for me. Because my parents had been monitoring me in math since I was younger, because they knew I was having difficulties with it. That's one of the reasons that I was able to be tested, and I was able to know that I had dyscalculia, is because I was really lucky to be able to have access to testing. And there's so many students who don't have access to it. In like a perfect world, everyone would be able to be tested, because after you're tested, there's so many more possibilities for you, because you know what's stopping you. You have more ways of working around it. And it really provides people with a sense of self-confidence. I felt more confident myself after I was diagnosed, because I knew that it wasn't necessarily that I was just bad at math. There was something stopping me. There was something that was making things confusing for me. And I didn't feel like it was my fault for not doing enough, or because I'd put in so much work into math, especially in middle school. And it really helped me to feel less afraid of all those things, because now I have good grades in math, and it really...
Wow. In conventional math classes, mm-hmm. how do you accomplish that? Is it just, do you have methods or adjustments that you've made in terms of how you mm-hmm. approach subject matter?
Specifically, I found one study method that always works for me is flashcards. And sometimes I have trouble specifically with multi-step problems, and so writing down each step in detail and going through that and practicing it, maybe with a teacher, just because sometimes you feel like you need that support with you. But even my Nana talks about how she could never learn anything unless she made a flashcard, and I always think that's kind of interesting, because my dad was never tested for any of that stuff. I know my mom... was, but it's interesting to see, like, there's so many people who don't know. So, like, whenever there's people who are diagnosed, you don't necessarily know where it's coming from if one of your parents wasn't, like, explicitly tested or diagnosed. So it can be really confusing for some people. 'Cause I think it's sad that there's been such a stigma around learning issues and stuff like that, where people will say, like, oh, you're dumb because you don't know this, when there's really something in the way stopping you. It's not that you're not able to do it. It's that there's something in the way that's making it more difficult.
Yeah, especially if you're a girl, too. There are people that will say, oh, girls don't do math as well as guys. They still say that, which is not true, but it gets said a lot. What are you learning? So you're in 11th grade. What is your math course this trimester?
So I'm in Algebra 2. I had trouble with pre-algebra when I was in 7th grade, so I was put in kind of a combination Algebra 1 and pre-algebra class when I was in 8th grade. And that actually really helped me because it gave me space to fully understand concepts before I moved on. So I didn't feel like I was being rushed into something I wasn't ready for. So it really helped me. But also, you're already like a they put you in like a math class ahead of like where most people are. So the thing is, the nice thing is I feel like I'm still at a good pace. And there's plenty of other kids who are in my grade or my age who are in the same boat as me. So I don't feel alone, like I'm the only one who's having a little bit of a hard time.
That's terrific. This is Sarah Woodside, who is a member of our Youth Advisory Council. I hope you're enjoying our conversation as much as I am. I want to shift gears in a minute, but before I do, if people were to Google, it's dyscalculia?
Yeah, it's like D-Y-S-C-A-L-U-L-I-A, I think
Well, but if you Google it, people would be able to find resources and other folks, even in the Pittsburgh area, that they could talk to about this or learn more.
A freshman at my school recently started the Learning Differences Student Union. And so it's really nice to talk to other kids my age, not necessarily who have what I have, but who have like ADHD and other things, like dyslexia and stuff like that, and talk to them about their experiences in school and work to make school a more comfortable place for all of us.
As a Youth Advisory Council member, I hereby ask you to try to see if you can get that group on sometime to talk about what they're doing, or maybe you can do a story about it as a feature. I think it would be great to do that. So here's my magic wand question. We only have a couple minutes left. If you could change a few things, you can have up to three, but you don't have to change them all in the world. We'll give you this nice magic wand, and you can just go bloop, and you can have three bloops, two bloops, however many bloops you want. Do you know what you'd change?
I'd make testing a lot more accessible and affordable. And like, if it was like a dream world, I'd make it free, because I think the testing opens so many doors for people.
Testing to for determine learning. Your learning style.
Yeah, or learning differences is so helpful because it makes students feel a lot more secure in themselves. And it did that for me. I think another thing I'd change is make sure that students have comfortable rooms for testing. Because I remember in middle school, they would put the people with extra time in like the basement. Not the basement, like the science labs in the basement. And it was cold and it was stools and like seats with no backs. And I just remember, like, I've talked to other students who felt like that. And they changed it. Like, they listened to us and changed it. But it kind of felt like we were in the dungeon because we were really wrong with us. And there were other kids upstairs. And
They may not have even realized. Yeah. It's like, we need to put them in an underutilized classroom so other periods don't run in.
I don't think they realized that. But I'm happy that a few of us spoke up and asked about it. And next year, the following year, we were put in a very nice classroom that had heating and all of those things. So it was really nice.
Nice. Anything beyond the world of education or in other areas that you'd change?
I wish that people would realize that you don't have to be amazing at everything. Because I think when I was younger, I felt a lot of pressure to be good at everything and to know what I was doing. But the funny thing is, my parents were never like, you have to be fantastic or anything. They always said, just try your best. So I think it might have been something outside of that in my mind that was telling me, like, you have to be good at everything and all this stuff. And I think especially going into the college application process, a lot of people feel like they have to, like, be a superhero and do everything in the world. But I think honing in on what you really enjoy. So, like, I really enjoy writing and all those things, so I found outlets where I can do stuff like that. Like being on SLB in the Youth Advisory Council and writing pieces and being a co-editor of my school's literary publication has given me a lot of confidence in my strengths and not to feel like it, like the my learning difference is all that I am, you know, finding those different outlets and just figuring out what you're good at, and you don't need to be good at everything.
Gosh, it's been so much fun to talk to you and informative too. Let's do it again, I hope. Thank you, Sarah. Anything else you, our time is just about done. Anything else you wanted to say that I maybe didn't give you space for?
Thank you so much for having me. It's been fun to talk to you, and I love the space, and I'm just happy to be here.
Thanks. We feel the same way about you, of course.